welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and this is our continuing series. Later on, we continue the story, First Love, from the Silver Theater from 1937. But right now, episode 2 of 4 of an adaptation of Emily Bronte's novel, Wuthering Heights, on the World's Greatest Novel Show. This NBC broadcast from January 9th, 1948.
The National Broadcasting Company brings you the second in a four-part version of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, another in our series of books that live the world's great novels.
As you may remember, my name is Lockwood. I moved from London to these bleak English moorlands to enjoy their strange solitude. My house is called Thrushcross Grange, and I leased it for a year from a cold, inscrutable man named Heathcliff, who lived some 4 miles away at Wuthering Heights. It was after a visit to that somber house and its grim inhabitants that I determined to learn the story of their lives. Luckily, for my curiosity's sake, Mrs. Ellen Dean, my housekeeper, had worked for the Earnshaw family at Wuthering Heights as long as 25 years ago, when Kathy and Hindley were but children. And Mr. Earnshaw brought home a beggar boy he found in the streets of Liverpool and named him Heathcliff. Since the story's a long one, and I insist no details be omitted, I'm only able to hear it in episodes when Mrs. Dean is able to spare me an hour from her duties. Oh, that's probably she now. Come in. Well, good evening, Mrs. Dean.
Good evening, Mr. Lockwood.
I'm glad to see you. I was afraid you might have forgotten your promise to continue your narrative this evening.
Indeed, I shouldn't forget, Mr. Lockwood, if it gives you enjoyment.
Fine. Here, take this chair.
Thank you. Well, let's see now. Where did I leave off?
You told me how Kathy and Heathcliff, through the years, had become close friends. But after Mr. and Mrs. Earnshaw died and Hindley married, he treated Heathcliff like a servant. But Kathy and Heathcliff had their happy moments when they could escape to the moors.
Ah, yes. What wild ones they were. And I told you about the time they slipped up here to Thrushcross Grange, where the Lintons and their two children lived, and how the Linton dog bit Kathy's ankle and she was forced to stay at Thrushcross Grange for 5 weeks till it mended.
Yes, quite right.
Well, when she returned to the Heights just before Christmas, she was a greatly changed little lady. And poor Heathcliff had gotten wilder looking by the day. I never shall forget the sight of her as she rode up that day on a handsome black pony, a very dignified person with brown ringlets falling from the cover of a feathered beaver. Hindley lifted her from the horse, exclaiming,
Kathy, you're quite a beauty.
Am I, Hindley?
You must have looked often enough in a mirror recently to be assured of that. Isabella Linton is not to be compared with her, is she, Ellen?
Oh, hello, Ellen.
Hello, Miss Kathy. I dare not come too close to you, for I'm all flour from the Christmas baking.
Where is Heathcliff? Well, Ellen, isn't Heathcliff about someplace?
He's sulking behind the settle over there. Heathcliff, you may come forward. You may come and wish Miss Catherine welcome like the other servants.
Why, Heathcliff, what on earth makes you hide from me? Oh, come on, give me a kiss. Ooh. How very black and cross you look. Oh, that's because I'm used to Edgar and Isabella Linton. Well, Heathcliff, have you forgotten me?
Shake hands, Heathcliff.
I shall not. I shall not stand to be laughed at. I shall not bear it.
Oh, now, don't run off, Heathcliff. I didn't mean to laugh at you, but I couldn't hinder myself. Oh, Heathcliff, shake hands at least. What are you sulky for? It was only that you looked odd. If you just wash your face and brush your hair, it'll be all right again.
You needn't have touched me. I shall be as dirty as I please. I like to be dirty, and I will be dirty.
Oh, Heathcliff, come back! Heathcliff!
Heathcliff was no more to be seen that day, and we were all too busy with Christmas preparations to look long for him. The next day, however, he slipped into the kitchen where I was working, and I made use of the chance to give him a real scolding.
You should be thoroughly ashamed of yourself, Heathcliff.
And what did I do?
Well, you've grieved Catherine. She's sorry she ever came home, I dare say.
Did she say she was grieved?
She cried when I told her you were off again this morning.
Well, I cried last night. I had more reason to cry than she.
Ah, yes. You had the reason of going to bed with a proud heart and an empty stomach. But if you be ashamed of yourself, you must ask her pardon. And though I have dinner to get ready, I'll steal time to arrange you so that Edgar Linton shall look quite like a doll beside you when he arrives, and that he does. You're younger, and yet you could knock him down in a twinkling.
But, Ellen, if I could knock him down 20 times, that wouldn't make him less handsome or me more so. I wish I had light hair and a fair skin and was dressed and behaved as well, and had a chance of being as rich as he will be. But I'll show them all someday, Ellen. I'll get even with Hindley for making a servant of me. And I'll show them all. I swear I will.
Isabella and Edgar Linton called at Wuthering Heights that day, and it was plain to see Kathy was fond of them. The next 3 years were very dark indeed. Mr. Hindley's wife died when their son was born, and in his grief he took heavily to drink, which made him abuse Heathcliff all the more. The baby, little Hareton, was given solely to my care, as Hindley never paid any attention to it. The curate dropped calling, and nobody decent came near us, except Edgar Linton's visits to Miss Cathy. By this time, at 17, she was the queen of the countryside, indeed lovely. But what a headstrong creature! One afternoon, she came into the kitchen while I was rocking Hareton. I thought Heathcliff had gone to the barn, but I found later he had been sitting behind the stove.
Are you alone, Ellen?
Yes, miss.
Is Heathcliff about?
No, miss. He was here a while ago, but I think he went to the barn.
Oh, dear, I'm so very unhappy.
Well, a pity. You're hard to please. So many friends and so few cares, and can't make yourself content.
Oh, Ellen, will you keep a secret for me?
Is it worth keeping?
Oh, yes. And it worries me, and I must let it out. I want to know what I should do. Today, Edgar Linton asked me to marry him, and I've given him an answer. But now, before I tell you whether it was consent or denial, you tell me which it ought to have been.
Well, really, Miss Catherine, how can I know?
Well, I accepted him, Ellen. Oh, be quick. Say whether I was wrong.
You accepted him?
Yes.
Then what good is it discussing the matter? You pledged your word and cannot retract.
But say whether I should have done so. Do.
Oh, there are many things to be considered before that question can be answered properly. First and foremost, do you love Mr. Edgar?
Who can help it? Of course I do.
Why do you love him, Miss Cathy?
Oh, nonsense, I do. That's sufficient.
By no means. You must say why.
Well, because he's handsome and pleasant to be with.
Bad.
And because he is young and cheerful.
Bad still.
And because he loves me. And he will be rich. And I shall like to be the greatest woman of the neighborhood. And I shall be proud of having such a husband.
Worst of all. Why, there are several other handsome, rich young men in the world, handsomer and richer possibly than he is. What should hinder you from loving them?
Well, if there are any, they're out of my way. Edgar is now, and I have only to do with the present, and I wish you would speak rationally.
Well, that settles it. If you have only to do with the present, marry Mr. Linton. And now, let us hear what you are unhappy about. Your brother will be pleased. The Lintons will not object. You will escape from a disorderly, comfortless home into a wealthy, respectable one. Where is the obstacle?
In whichever place the soul lives. In my soul and in my heart, I'm convinced I'm wrong. I've no business to marry Edgar Linton, and if wicked Hindley hadn't brought Heathcliff so low, I shouldn't have thought of it. But it would degrade me now to marry Heathcliff. So he shall never know how I love him. And I love him not because he's handsome, but because he's more myself than I am. Whatever our souls are made of, his and mine are the same. Linton's is as different as a moonbeam from lightning or frost from fire. What was that? Who was that, Ellen? Why do you look so strange?
Nothing's wrong, miss. It was only Joseph shutting the door.
You're sure it wasn't Heathcliff? I want to be sure Heathcliff doesn't know what being in love is.
I see no reason that he should not know, as well as you. And if you are his choice, he will be the most unfortunate creature that ever was born. As soon as you become Mrs. Linton, he loses friend and love and all. He'll be quite deserted.
Deserted? We separated? Not as long as I live, Ellen. Every Linton on the face of the earth might melt into nothing before I could consent to forsake Heathcliff. Well, I shouldn't be Mrs. Linton were such a price demanded. He'll be as much to me as he has been all his lifetime. I know you think me a selfish wretch, but did it never strike you, Ellen, that if Heathcliff and I were married, we should be beggars? Whereas if I marry Edgar, I can aid Heathcliff to rise and place him out of my brother's power. What was that? Joseph, who was that on the horse?
I could not stop him.
What are you talking about? What's the matter?
That Heathcliff. He jumped on the horse and dashed away. When I asked him where he was going and when he'd be back, he said he didn't know where and he wasn't coming back. He's stolen the horse.
Heathcliff, gone. Oh, Joseph, did you close that door a few minutes ago?
No, miss. I just now come from the field.
Oh, he heard. He heard what I said. Heathcliff was in this room. You lied to me, Ellen. I must get him.
Heathcliff.
Heathcliff. Oh, Heathcliff. Come back. Heathcliff.
There was a violent storm that night, which settled over the heights in full fury. And Kathy didn't come home until after midnight and with a terrible case of chills and fever. She was in such a state I thought she was going mad. She lay abed for over a fortnight, raving and crying for Heathcliff. But he was never seen again after the night of the thunderstorm. And Edgar Linton danced such attendance on Kathy that 3 years later he led her to the altar. And they persuaded me to come here to Thrushcross Grange as housekeeper, since Mr. and Mrs. Linton had died in the meanwhile.
Well, Mrs. Dean, was Kathy happy in her new life with Edgar Linton?
She behaved infinitely better than I dared to expect. She seemed almost overfond of Mr. Linton, and even to his sister Isabella she showed plenty of affection. Of course, they were both very attentive to her comfort. I observed that Mr. Edgar had a deep-rooted fear of ruffling her humor. And for the space of a year, the gunpowder lay as harmless as sand because no fire came near to explode it. They seemed in possession of deep and growing happiness. But it ended. On a mellow evening in September, I was coming from the garden with a heavy basket of apples which I'd been gathering. It had got dusk, and I lingered by the door to look at the moon when I heard a voice behind me say...
Ellen, is that you?
What? Who?
I have waited here an hour, and the whole of that time all round has been still as death. I dared not enter. You do not know me. Look, I am not a stranger.
What? You come back? Is it really you?
Yes. Heathcliff. Are they at home? Where is she? You needn't look so disturbed, Ellen. Is she here? Speak. I won't have one word with her, your mistress. Go and say some person from Gimmerton desires to see her.
Well, how will she take it? The surprise bewilders me. It will put her out of her head. You are Heathcliff, and yet so altered.
Stop chattering, Ellen, and go carry my message. I'm in torment till you do.
I went to announce his arrival with deep misgivings. I was sure no good could come of his presence.
Are you bringing tea, Ellen?
It's not quite ready, Mum.
Well, what is it, Ellen? You wish to speak with me?
You look troubled, Ellen.
Oh, no, sir, but a person from Gimmerton wishes to see you, Mum.
What does he want, Ellen?
Well, I did not question him.
Well, close the curtains, Nellie, and bring on tea. I'll be back again directly, Edgar.
She was gone but a few minutes, and when she returned, she was greatly changed.
Edgar, darling, Heathcliff's come back. He is.
Well, don't strangle me for that. Oh. He never struck me as such a marvelous treasure. There's no need to be frantic.
Well, I know you don't like him, yet for my sake you must be friends. Now, shall I tell him to come up?
Here, into the parlor?
Oh, where else?
Seems the kitchen would be a more suitable place for one of your old servants.
No, for I cannot sit in the kitchen.
Ellen, set two tables here. One for your master and Miss Isabella, being gentry, and the other for Heathcliff and myself, being of the lower orders. Will that please you, dear? Or must I have the fire lighted elsewhere? If so, give direction.
Stay where you are, Catherine. Ellen, you bid him step up. And Catherine, try to be glad without being absurd. The whole household need not witness the sight of your welcoming a runaway servant as a brother.
I was amazed to behold the transformation in Heathcliff. He had grown a tall, athletic, well-formed man, beside whom Mr. Linton seemed quite slender. A half-civilized ferocity lurked yet in the depressed brows and eyes, full of black fire, but it was subdued. He took a seat opposite Catherine, and they were much too absorbed in their mutual joy to suffer embarrassment. But not so Mr. Linton. He grew pale with pure annoyance, a feeling that reached its climax when his wife seized Heathcliff's hand and said,
I shall think it a dream tomorrow. I shall not be able to believe that I have seen and touched and spoken to you once more. And yet, cruel Heathcliff, you don't deserve this welcome. To be absent and silent for 4 years and never think of me.
A little more than you have thought of me. I heard of your marriage, Cathy, not long since. I plan to have just one glimpse of you, settle my score with Hindley, and then prevent the law by doing execution on myself.
Oh, Heathcliff.
Your welcome has put these ideas out of my mind. But beware of meeting me with another aspect next time. Nay, you'll not drive me off again. You were really sorry for me, were you? Well, there was cause. I fought through a bitter life since I last heard your voice, and you must forgive me, for I struggled only for you.
Catherine, unless we are to have cold tea, please to serve it. Mr. Heathcliff will have a long walk wherever he may lodge tonight, and I am thirsty.
Ellen? It's I, Ellen.
Oh, yes, Mum. Is something I miss?
Oh, no. I'm sorry to disturb you, but, well, I can't rest. I want some living creature to keep me company in my happiness. Edgar is sulky because I'm glad of a thing that does not interest him.
But they have never liked each other. Oh. Let Mr. Linton alone about Heathcliff, unless you would like an open quarrel between them.
But does it not show great weakness on Edgar's part? I never feel hurt at the brightness of Isabella's yellow hair and the whiteness of her skin. It pleases Edgar to see us cordial, and, well, that pleases me. Oh, they're so much alike. They're spoiled children.
You're mistaken, Mrs. Linton. They humor you. I know what there would be to do if they did not. You can well afford to indulge their passing whims as long as their business is to anticipate all your desires. You may, however, fall out at last over something of equal consequence to both sides. And then those you term weak are very capable of being as obstinate as you.
Oh, no, Ellen. I tell you, I have such faith in Linton's love that I believe I might kill him, and he wouldn't wish to retaliate.
Then you should value him the more for his affection.
Well, I do, but he needn't resort to whining for trifles. He must get accustomed to Heathcliff. So he may as well like him.
Frankly, Mum, I was quite surprised to learn that Heathcliff's going to Wuthering Heights. He seems reformed in every respect.
I wondered at that as much as you until he explained it. You see, he stopped at Wuthering Heights to gather information about me. Hindley had some people sitting at cards, and Heathcliff joined them. Well, my brother lost some money to him, and finding Heathcliff plentifully supplied, asked him to stop back in the evening. Hindley is too reckless to select his acquaintances with care. He doesn't trouble himself to think how he has wronged Heathcliff. And also, Heathcliff wants to stay at the Heights so that we may see each other. Often.
Have you no fear of the consequences, Mrs. Linton?
None for my Heathcliff. His strong head will keep him from danger. A little for Hindley. But he can't be made morally worse than he is.
And for yourself?
No, I've never been so happy, Ellen.
But I had a deep fear. It was first fulfilled in a way that was a shock even to me. We all remarked during some time that Miss Isabella fretted and pined over something.
She was cross and wearisome, but we excused her to a certain extent on the plea of ill health. But when Mrs. Linton threatened to send for the doctor, Miss Isabella said it was only Catherine's harshness that made her unhappy.
How can you say I am harsh, you naughty girl?
You are. You are.
Oh, you're surely losing your reason. When have I been harsh? Now, tell me.
Yesterday. And now.
Yesterday? And on what occasion?
In our walk along the moor. You told me to ramble where I pleased while you sauntered on with Mr. Heathcliff.
Oh, and that's your notion of harshness? It was no hint that your company was superfluous. We didn't care whether you kept with us or not. I merely thought our talk would have nothing entertaining for your ears.
Oh, no. You wished me away because you knew I liked to be there.
Oh, Helen, can she be sane? Now, I'll repeat our conversation word for word, Isabella, and you point out any charm it could have had for you.
I don't mind the conversation. I wanted to be with...
Well?
Yes, with him. And I won't always be sent off. You're a dog in the manger, Kathy, and desire no one to be loved but yourself.
You are an impertinent little monkey. But I'll not believe this idiocy. It's impossible that you could covet the admiration of Heathcliff, that you consider him an agreeable person. I hope I misunderstood you, Isabella.
No, you have not. I love him more than you ever loved Edgar. And he might love me if you would let him.
I wouldn't be you for a kingdom, then. Ellen, help me to convince her of her madness. Tell her what Heathcliff is. He's not a rough diamond. He's a fierce, pitiless man. I know he couldn't love a Linton, and yet he'd be quite capable of marrying your fortune and expectations. Now, there's my picture, and I'm his friend.
For shame. For shame. You're worse than 20 foes, you poisonous friend.
You won't believe me, then. You think I speak from wicked selfishness.
I'm certain you do, and I shudder at you.
Well, then, try for yourself, if that be your spirit.
Oh, Ellen, all are against me. But she uttered a falsehood, didn't she? Mr. Heathcliff is not a fiend. He has an honorable soul and a true one.
Banish him from your thoughts, miss. He's no mate for you. Mrs. Linton spoke strongly, and yet I cannot contradict her. Even now, he is gambling nightly with Mr. Hindley and getting him in debt to him so he can take Wuthering Heights for his own.
Idle gossip. You're leagued with the rest, Ellen. I'll not listen to your slanders. You're only trying to convince me there is no happiness in the world.
Whether she would have got over this fancy if left to herself, I cannot say, for she had little time to reflect. The day after, there was a justice meeting at the next town. My master was obliged to attend, and Mr. Heathcliff, aware of his absence, called rather earlier than usual. Catherine and Isabella were sitting in the library on hostile but silent terms.
Come in, Heathcliff. I'm glad you're here. You see, two people sadly in need of a third to thaw the ice between them, and you are the very one we would both choose. Heathcliff, I'm proud to show you at last somebody that dotes on you more than myself.
What?
Catherine.
I expect you to feel flattered. No, it's not Ellen. Don't look at her. My poor little sister-in-law is breaking her heart by mere contemplation of your physical and moral beauty.
Catherine!
No, Isabella, you shan't run off. I was informed last night, Heathcliff, that if I would but have the manners to stand aside, she would shoot a shaft into your soul that would fix you forever and send my image into eternal oblivion.
Catherine, I thank you to adhere to the truth and not slander me, even in joke.
No, but I'm not joking, Isabella. I shan't be called a dog in the manger again.
Oh!
What did you mean by teasing the creature in that manner, Kathy? You were not speaking the truth, were you?
No, I assure you I was. She's been dying for your sake for several weeks. But don't notice it, Freddy. I wish to punish your sauciness. That's all. I like her too well, my dear Heathcliff, to let you seize and devour her up.
And I like her too ill to attempt it. Except in a very ghoulish fashion. Yes, you'd hear of odd things if I lived alone with that mawkish waxen face. The most ordinary would be painting on its whiteness the colors of the rainbow and turning the blue eyes black every day or two. They detestably resemble Linton's. She's her brother's heir, is she not?
Well, I should be sorry to think so. Half a dozen nephews should erase the title, please, heaven. But dismiss it from your mind. You are too prone to covet your neighbor's goods. And remember, this neighbor's goods are mine.
If they were mine, Kathy, they would be nonetheless that. But though Isabella Linton may be silly, she is scarcely mad. So we'll dismiss the matter as you advise.
From their tongues, they did dismiss it. And Catherine, probably from her thoughts. Heathcliff, I felt certain, recalled it often in the course of the evening, and I was right. The next time he called, Miss Isabella happened to be in the courtyard. As soon as he saw her, he took a sweeping survey of the yard and then walked up to her. She seemed embarrassed and desirous of getting away. And then the scoundrel had the impudence to embrace her. Mrs. Linton was in the kitchen with me and saw Isabella tear herself free and run into the garden. A minute after, Heathcliff opened the door.
Heathcliff? What are you about raising this stir? I said you must let Isabella alone. Now, I beg you will, unless you're tired of being received here and wish Linton to draw the bolts against you.
Heaven forbid that he should try.
Hush! Why have you disregarded my request? Did she come across you on purpose?
What's it to you? I have a right to kiss her if she chooses, and you have no right to object.
If you like Isabella, you shall marry her. But do you like her? Tell the truth, Heathcliff. There. You won't answer. I'm certain you don't.
And would Mr. Linton approve of his sister marrying that man?
He might spare himself the trouble. I could do as well without his approbation. And as to you, Catherine, I have a mind to speak a few words now while we're at it. I want you to be aware that I know you have treated me infernally. Infernally, do you hear? And if you flatter yourself that I don't perceive it, you are a fool. And if you think I can be consoled by sweet words, you are an idiot. And if you fancy I'll suffer unrevenged, I'll convince you of the contrary in a very little while. Meantime, thank you for telling me your sister-in-law's secret. I swear I'll make the most of it and stand you aside.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte is one of the world's great novels brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company.
The World's Greatest Novels on Tune to Two Yesterday from January 9th, 1948 on NBC. Episode 2 of 4 of their adaptation of Wuthering Heights being continued next week on the show. This is an hour of continuing series on Tune to Two Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, Jimmy Stewart portrays the leading man in the Silver Theater adaptation of the story First Love, broadcast in four parts. At the time of this episode, Stewart was a relative newcomer on the Hollywood scene, although in the very same year he was starring in three motion pictures, 1937's Seventh Heaven, Navy Blue and Gold, and The Last Gangster, alongside Edward G. Robinson. He co-stars now in this episode of First Love from October 10th, 1937 on CBS.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. International Silver Company, makers of 1847 Rogers Brothers, America's finest silver plate, welcome you to the 1847 Silver Theater and the second episode of the romantic four-part comedy drama by Grover Jones, First Love, starring Rosalind Russell and James Stewart.
And the silver curtain is rising on the second episode of First Love, the story of Gene Wilson, played by Rosalind Russell, and Jimmy Parks, played by James Stewart. Just two young people against the town called Hollywood. I know you're anxious to hear what's in store for them.
Hello? Oh, Jimmy. Yes. Yes, of course it is. But, Jimmy, that paper, I just saw it. Well, I didn't get 1,100 telegrams and that about 8 foreign consuls wanting to entertain me. You can't tell all those lies, Jim. Oh, then you're really going through with it? I know, but I thought overnight you might have changed your mind. Oh, yes. Yes, I can be packed by that
time. Well, never mind where we're going, Jeannie. Now, you just leave everything to me. Be ready at 1, remember? And don't go near that restaurant you were working. Goodbye. Come on, Perry. We got to move.
You're telling me. We got to move a couple of mountains before you turn that waitress into a star. Oh, Jimmy, if you wanted to promote some girl to get even with Martin Rickey for firing you, you could have at least picked one that could act.
Well, use your head, will you? That's just the point. I sell him a girl that can't act. And I make him pay $1 million for her.
Episode 2 of the Park Fairy Tale will be heard tomorrow at the same hour.
Yeah, you think so, will you? Now, listen. My boy, you heard me tell Jean Wilson we'd meet her at 1 o'clock. All right. Now, between now and then, we're going to set the stage for our little show. We're going to put Jean Wilson in a frame so that any producer in Hollywood would buy her.
Yeah, but Jimmy...
I know. Money. Now, listen. When you've got something to sell that's worth $1 million, well, you can always find partners to help you with the deal. Now, come on, Perry. Follow me, boy. That's the picture, Alphonse. 4% of her first year's salary in return for the use of this apartment.
But this girl, who is she?
She's the real goods. I'm behind her. Have I ever missed yet? Didn't I put over Ella McRae, Thomas Stone, Trista Lane? All right, what do you say?
Yeah, Mr. Parks. Because it is you, I will do it. But please, not the penthouse, my most valuable.
No, the penthouse or nothing.
All right. I hope she is good.
1% of her first year's salary, eh? And I'd be in complete charge of the kitchen?
Complete charge.
I'll do it for 3%.
2%.
So, but she'd better be good.
Why should I? I get $50 a day renting my car to pitches.
$50? That's chicken feed. This means a share in $1 million. Now, you know me, Buck. I don't call them wrong. When I start out to make a star, I make them a star.
Okay, Jimmy. 2%, you say? I'll take it.
Sounds crazy to me, but if y'all say it's all right, it wreck my village.
I being houseboy for 1%? Okay, Mr. Park, it's our deal.
I'd have to have 3% for it.
1% at least. Oh, so.
Make it 5%.
But that amount of cost is 2%.
2%. Oh, hello.
Hello, Jean. You ready?
Yes, buddy.
Well, now, I'll take your bag. Let's go.
Oh, Jimmy. Wait just a minute.
Yeah? What's the idea?
Well, it's sort of a goodbye, I guess.
What, goodbye?
To this funny little place. Here in the view of brick walls and laundry lines. You see, a lot of pretty swell jeans went back here. At least I thought at the time they'd gone back. And you sort of get attached to, Well, you couldn't very well understand what I feel about it.
Well, what do you mean I couldn't understand how you feel? Say, there was a room in a Flatbush boarding house, second floor back. There was a crocheted thingamajig on the wall that said, "Success is yours." I was trying to write plays then. Each time I had a script rejected, I'd come home and see that thing staring at me. I finally fixed it.
What did you do?
I threw the darn thing out of the window. I gave up trying to be an honest writer and became a press agent. Well, you ready now?
Yes, I'm all ready.
All right, now take a deep breath, Jean Wilson. Here comes fame.
Okay, Jimmy Paul. Let her come.
What do you think of that?
Oh, Jimmy. The rising towers. It's the penthouse. Why, I've never seen anything like it. Not even in pictures.
Oh, don't be silly. This room's only 40 feet long. In pictures, they're always 140. That is, unless the people are rich, and then they're big.
Oh, and the furniture. It's real Queen Anne.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, look, Jimmy, in that balcony.
No, wait. I want you to see that for the first time tonight. Besides, there's something else for you to see first. In here.
Mm.
Now, the lady's boudoir. And in case you're wondering, that canopied thing over there that looks like it's off of Valentine, that's your bed.
Oh, Jimmy, don't show me any more. Now, I can't take it.
Now, just this. Our international star's wardrobe.
If I were my grandmother now, I'd faint.
I hope I guessed right on the size. I told Hedry and I thought you were about the same measurement as Joan Crawford.
Hedry, you mean to say he made these clothes?
Well, sure, nobody else. Now look at this, blue one with your fancy sleeves. I picked that up myself. That's pretty swell, isn't it?
Oh, Jimmy, you wait out here. I've just got to try it on.
Okay. You know, these are only the first dresses. Why, they'll be all...
Jimmy.
Yeah.
What's wrong in there?
Well, there's nothing wrong, is it, Perry?
Oh, no, Jimmy, Mr. Rock and Snuffle is here to see you.
Rock and Snuffle?
Well, sure, you know Rock and Snuffle.
Oh.
The percentage. There.
Quiet. Gene, someone's here to see me. I'll just be a minute.
All right, Jimmy.
Go on, Perry.
Hey, what is this?
We will tell you what it is, Monsieur Parks. We have played your little game so far. Yes. But also, we are business people. We demand our contract.
All right now. You'll get your contracts, all of you. They'll be made out tonight. Well?
If you wanted all the truth, we ain't sure that we want to go through with this business anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a rumor around town that this here Gene Wilson ain't no international star at all and never could be.
Yeah, how do we know that you're not your kind?
I never had no Gene Wilson before.
Oh, Jimmy. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Gene, that dress, Miss Wilson, these are the servants. I'm the trades people. And
how do you do? How do you do,
Miss Wilson, I'm just explaining to them their duties and all that.
Yeah, and all that.
Yeah, but you needn't bother with these domestic details. Now, suppose you listen to the radio in there. You'll find it hidden in an ashtray or something.
All right, Jimmy, and I'm very happy to have met you all. I'll see you all next. That is, I'll ring when I need any of you.
Thank you, Miss Wilson.
Isn't it,
Cesaro? Well, who wants to back out now,
huh? We'll sign, all of us. Just give us our contract.
All right, in the morning. Now, suppose you all get back to work.
Yes,
all right. Beautiful. Yeah. Four. Seven. Empress is perfectly timed. Did you see their faces when they saw on that dress?
You should have seen your own. Where are you going?
I'm going into gym.
Wait a minute. What about that percentage list?
Oh, here they are.
Yeah. Jimmy, my boy, have you looked at this list lately?
Oh, what do you mean?
This total. You've given away 70% of it.
Well, I had to cover everything, didn't I? Besides, that leaves 30% for us.
That's not so bad.
No, that's 20% for me and 10% for you.
That's not so good. Hey, hold everything. I just thought, what about Gene?
Oh, my God. I forgot all about it.
Of course, I guess that don't matter. She's just going to do the work.
Now, quiet. I'll fix it. I'll give her 10% of mine.
Well.
And 5% of yours.
Well.
Now, you go ahead and line up these contracts. I've got to get Gene set for tonight.
Hey, Jimmy, wait a minute. Look, for the last time, don't do it.
Well, what are you talking about?
Oh, call it off. It'll break that kid's heart when she finds out you sold her down the river like this.
Well, so what? I said I'd make her a star, didn't I? Well, I will. What does she care how?
But I got a hunch she does care, and so have you. Haven't you, Jimmy? Haven't you, Jimmy?
Now, I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I do know what I'm doing. Well, Perry, I thought of telling her the whole business, but can't you see what it means? If she learns about the percenters, well, she won't let all those people depend on her. She'll back out, and then where are we? Where is she?
Just where we were when we started.
Okay.
Can you tell her?
Yeah, that works.
Good. But it's pal to pal, break it easy. Because I got a hunch it's going to be something to that kid.
Gene?
Oh, hello. I stole a look from the balcony. I couldn't wait till night. I found the radio. I hope you liked it. Well, Jimmy, the way you look. Don't you like the dress?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's not bad. It's, oh, the dress is swell. I mean, you and I. Oh, it's a swell dress.
Jimmy, what time is it?
About 2, I guess.
That gives me 10 hours.
For 10 hours?
Until midnight. When this dress turns back into an apron, the limousine we came in back into a pumpkin, and the chauffeur, well, what is it now? A pair of white rats. Ah, but there's just one thing you forgot, Your Highness.
What's that?
This last slipper. I looked all through the closet, and they weren't there.
Look, Jeannie, I've got to talk to you. I hate to have to say this, but... Well,
maybe I was wrong.
What?
About the 10 hours. Maybe it's now. Is that what that look in your eyes means, Jimmy? That you ought to call it off?
Call it off? No, now wait a minute.
Well, of course, if you do, it's all right, Jimmy. I don't blame you.
No, but you've got to understand. We can't go through
with
it.
I understand. I do. You thought it over, that's all, and you see that it won't work.
Well, it would work, but you see there are others. That is...
I'll go take out the dress. Jimmy?
Yes?
About the money you must have spent. This apartment, the servants, and the dresses. I'm sorry.
Well, that's just the point, Jean. The money is...
You hate to lose it, I know.
Oh, no, I don't. I mean, I wouldn't if...
Jimmy, something more feet.
Oh, Jean.
It's crazy. I mean, all of a sudden, everything is upside down. Last night, you were trying to sell me on this, and now I... Oh, there's something in me that tells me to try to sell you.
Jeannie,
you know what I did all last night? I lay awake for hours, thinking of what you said. Of all the fun we'd have doing this thing together, and of the ways I could help you. And I could, honestly, I could. Of course, there is the acting. I still don't know what I'd do before a camera. But with you to help me, and about the lights and the makeup and the stories like we talked, maybe I... Well, it's an idea, anyway. You see, thinking that you had faith in me almost gave me faith in myself.
And you're going to keep it. What's the matter with me, Jeannie? You're going
to
keep it.
Oh, Jimmy, I want to. I want to.
We will put this thing over, Jeannie, tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight, yes. You're going to wear that dress and you're going to the Trocadero.
Jimmy!
You're not alone. The Siamese ambassador's going with us.
The Siamese ambassador?
Yeah, you can laugh, but there'll be a lot of producers there tonight that won't.
But, Jimmy, I've never even met a Siamese.
Ah, you met this one.
Oh.
You remember Yama, that studio janitor that used to come around to the restaurant and get bicarbonates of so-so for Martin Rickey?
Not him.
The same.
But he's not Siamese.
Ah, he is tonight. He's borrowing some oriental robes and some long mustaches from a cousin of his, and then... never mind. You wait till you see him.
Oh, Jimmy, this is crazy.
Sure it is, and so is Hollywood. Now, look, Jeannie, before this night's over, you're going to have a contract in those little hands of yours. A 5-year contract signed by Martin Rickey, president of Superba Productions.
You can't get a contract from me, from him. You said he fired you.
Well, yes, he did, but that doesn't matter. He knows I never miss picking stars, and if he thinks that some other producer wants you, why, he'll sign you in a minute.
But how do we know any other producer will want me?
I'll see to that. But you'll have to help me, Jeannie. Now, if you ever acted in your life, you've got to tonight. You've got to look and act and sound like Gene Wilson I valued. The Gene Wilson who studied drama in every nation of the globe. The girl who's accustomed to eating with 6 ambassadors instead of 1. Now, how about it? Can you do it for me?
Can I do it? When it's for you? Oh, Jimmy, you just watch me.
Oh, Perry, where are they? Now, something's happened to them.
They'll be here. You told Gene to hold off till it was late enough for all the big shots to have arrived.
I know. But listen, are you sure the conductor understands about that music?
Sure. The doorman's going to phone in. Will you quit worrying?
There they are. Boy, look at that crowd. Every eye on the door, Perry. Listen, this is perfect.
Yeah, if Yama doesn't trip over those mustaches.
Now, shh. Now, wait a minute. Look at them. Look at them, Perry. What a picture. The way that girl carries herself. Well, she's worth $1 million.
Maybe you're not so crazy after all. Martin Rickey over there is taking it big.
All right, here she comes. Come on, get up, Stooge.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Clark. And Mr. Perry.
Good evening, Miss Wilson.
Hiya. Good evening, Miss Wilson.
Gentlemen, may I introduce the Siamese ambassador, Dr. Chang Yananda, Mr. James Park.
How do you do?
Oh, being very pleased to...
Quiet, Mark. Don't talk, just bow.
And Mr. Perry Burke.
And don't order ham and eggs.
Please, do be seated, gentlemen. How was it, Jimmy?
Perfect, kid. Perfect. We're a cinch. Now, just keep it up. Keep it up now.
Uh-oh. Watch, Yama. Here comes the waiter.
Uh-oh. Now, no English, Yama. No matter what happens, no English.
You wish to order now?
Yes. Miss Wilson?
A chicken sandwich and coffee.
And the, gentleman?
Yes. Miss Wilson, since Dr. Yananda doesn't speak English, I suggest you translate his order.
Huh?
Yes, you just...
Oh, yes, of course. Yanasinaga, o onomanak salale tumap to varoka?
Konoshiro hagojima, nan yitterka wakyo karana, isage koch.
He'll have a ham sandwich on rice.
Nan mo yakenga isage koch, makizoshi iriko denshin bashira kimpira gombo to. Ya, arigatou gozaimashita.
With mustard.
Yes. And you, gentlemen?
Make ours the same without mustard.
Very well.
Oh, Jimmy.
Jimmy, I can't.
Sure, you can. You're marvelous. And anyway, we won't be long now. You've got to move fast before your arm slips. Gene, would you mind dancing with Perry?
What do you mean, mind?
Of course not.
And then meet me on the balcony about 5 minutes. Right now, I've got some important business to attend to. Glad to see you. How are things over at Transnational?
Never mind, Parks. Get to the point. I've known you too long to think you came over here just to be sociable. Want to sell me that girl? Well, I might be interested.
No, you wouldn't. But I have got a little idea you might go for.
Yeah?
That is, unless you object to putting Martin Rickey behind the biggest eight ball in the history of Hollywood.
Object? When he's the guy that started Double Features? I could choke him.
Now, you won't have to, because Colton... I've got a way you can really put the hooks into Rickey.
Yeah, how?
Well, it's very simple. Now, in a few minutes, you just happen over to our table and offer Gene Wilson a contract with Transnational.
What? Well, how do I know she isn't a phony?
Well, I'll answer that one. She is a phony. She made three of the worst tests since talking, all in one. But you're not going to sign the girl, Colton. You're just going to bid for her.
Huh?
Yeah, now, it's like this. Rickey hasn't had his eyes off the girl since... Here you are.
Oh, it's perfect out here, Jimmy. Let's not go right back in. I'd much rather be Gene Wilson than Gene Wilson, if you know what I mean.
Okay, well, get your hair quick. It's just about time. Oh, that's swell.
What is?
Well, I was just watching. Colton's come over to our table and started talking to Perry. Oh, if that doesn't bring Rickey over.
Who's Colton?
Oh, he's head of Transnational Productions and Ricky's personal enemy number one, and he's interested in you, too.
Oh, maybe he'll give me a contract instead.
No, he won't. I told him how swell you are, just, you know, to get some competition for Rickey, someone to bid against him.
Oh.
And boy, is it going to work.
What am I offered, gentlemen, for the young girl? Strong, healthy, I have 1,000. Did I hear 2?
Yeah, you can kid about it if you want to, but that's how I'm going to do it. You see,
Look.
What?
A falling star. Oh, superstitious?
Oh, not a bit. Oh, I know it. Rickey, there he is. Come on, Gene.
Oh, wait just a minute. There's one question I've got to ask you.
Well, not now.
Now, Jimmy, now. Why, Jimmy?
Why?
All this for me.
Oh, I get it. Oh, you mean have I any crazy ideas about, I don't know, are there any strings to this? Well, now listen, Jeannie, I've been around long enough to know that business by itself, okay. Romance by itself, okay. When you try mixing them, dynamite. Is that right?
Oh, yes, Jimmy, that's right.
Yes, and this is strictly business. Oh, that reminds me. Now, you better sign these before we go in. Here's a pen.
Sign them? What are they?
Well, one's a blank contract, and when I get the terms set with Rickey, I'll fill it in and then get him to sign it before we leave tonight, see?
You mean I sign the contract before it's even made out, before he has
it? Don't ask questions, Gene. Just sign it.
All right. There. But this one...
Yeah, that too.
What's this?
Well, that's a contract between us. That makes me legally your manager, see?
But we don't need that if we're going to do it together,
now,
Jimmy.
Will you please not argue, Gene? Now, we've got to get in there. I'm doing business, and you have to.
Well, wait just a minute, Jimmy. Let me understand. This means you're legally my manager, that you handle all my affairs?
Yes, of course it does. It makes me an official 10%er, you see.
Oh, then you get 10% of all I make for your services?
Well, yes, of course. That's part of it. Now, there's no hurry about that end of it, but the thing is, we can't talk now. Now, sign, Jeannie, so I can get in and get this deal set for you.
Yes, Jimmy.
Will you please hurry,
but I
Jimmy.
Want to tell... I mean... All right. There.
Okay, now let's go.
I'm not going in.
You're not going yet, but you've got to go in.
Aren't you my manager? What do I pay you for? Besides, I've done my parade act. They've seen what they're buying. Go ahead with your auction.
Well, don't be crazy
now.
I'm
not being crazy. I'm being sane for the first time in 3 days. I'm not going in there.
But you... What's wrong with you anyway? Okay, stay here then.
Dean Wilson... You're a fool.
So you're going to Hollywood. Well, you're foolish if you ask me.
You better go back. I couldn't even use her in slapstick comedy. Gee, look, forget all that. I'll make you a star and together we're a cinch. They can't beat us.
I
that girl for Transnational. I'll offer $50,000 a year.
Oh, no, you don't, Colton. I'm signing that girl. I offer $80,000.
Oh, yeah, Ricky, $100,000.
$120,000, Jim.
$150,000.
$175,000.
$200,000.
$275,000. $300,000. Sold.
Jeannie, look, I did it. Hold out your hands. There it is. 5 years, Gene Wilson. A 5-year contract with Martin Ricky as top star of Superba Productions.
When does my salary start?
Why, in a week. Why? Well, what a crazy question.
You know what time it is?
Why?
I can tell you. It's just 12 o'clock. But I'm lucky. Yeah, I'm lucky.
Well,
my coach hasn't turned back into a pumpkin.
Well, what are you talking about, Gene?
You wouldn't understand, Jimmy. It hasn't anything to do with business. Yeah, I'm lucky. I'm lucky in another way, too. I don't have to worry about glass slippers. My Prince Charming is sure to find me to collect his 10%. Well, I'm going home now. Good night, Jimmy Park.
The Hollywood Romance of Gene Wilson and Jimmy Parks, as played by Rosalind Russell and James Stewart, will be continued in the third episode of the 1847 Silver Theater production, First Love, next Sunday evening at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
The Silver Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 10th of October, 1937, on CBS, bringing the curtain down on this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the very same time as we continue these four-part stories from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.